The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at midnight, July 4th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
Hello. Thank you for listening to K-Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm Kelly the Voice. I attended an impeachment march and rally in Los Angeles on Sunday, and it was a blast. It was one of 45 sister marches. There were thousands marching across the United States. There was marching, and there was chanting, and yelling at Trump supporters. And all in all, it was just a great time. We chanted, no Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA. And Congress, give us more than speech. We demand that you impeach. There was this great moment when the acoustics on the block aligned so that many people chanting impeach Donald Trump rose through the streets in this riot of noise. There are a few dozen Trump supporters who,
this is America,
adorably dressed up in their red, white, and blue costumes. They even brought props. The best part, I was reading Laura J. Nelson's tweets. She was the LA Times reporter who was covering the protest. And she tweeted this picture of these two burly men getting in each other's faces. One has his Trump shirt on and a Trump hat. She writes in her tweet, a bit of heated confrontation here. One of the protesters accusing the other guy of being a Nazi. And then, not long after, she tweeted, both are Trump supporters. The one on the right is accusing the one on the left of being a Nazi and has a white pride tattoo of his own. And then she tweets, meanwhile, the impeachment march is underway downtown, at least a few thousand people here. See, we didn't even need to throw down with these supporters. They took care of that themselves. Anyhow, that was my Sunday.
El pueblo unido jamás será vencido.
I highly recommend hitting up a march next time you get a chance. Protest while you still can. It's worth it. This episode of K-Voice of Resistance is dedicated to Oscar-nominated actor James Cromwell, who is a hero of the Resistance. He has been sentenced to jail for refusing to pay fines related to his arrest at a protest at a New York power plant. The Times-Herald Record of Middleton reports the 77-year-old Cromwell has been sentenced to 7 days in jail. Cromwell was among a group found guilty of obstructing traffic at a December 2015 sit-in at a site of a natural gas-fired power plant being built that is threatening the environment. Cromwell says that he hopes that people can see the injustice of the jail sentence and that others may be inspired to join the pickets.
That'll do, Peggy. That'll do.
Here's a quick news rundown. The Afghanistan all-girls robotics team can't get visas to the U.S. They've been rejected for a one-week travel visa to escort the robot to the inaugural First Global Challenge, an international robotics competition happening in Washington, D.C. in mid-July. Because the party in power, and now in control of the Supreme Court, are cowardly, hate-filled children. Ooh! A federal court on Monday dealt a blow to our creepy tweeter-in-chief, and Scott never met an oil-soaked seagull he didn't like, Pruitt's EPA. The court upheld an Obama-era rule limiting methane emissions from oil and gas wells, making Scotty Pruitt sad. The court's resistance delivers a legal setback to the EPA's attempt to undo virtually all of Obama's environmental rules. In a 2-1 ruling, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit canceled EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt's 90-day stay on the methane rule, which he announced about a month ago. The stay temporarily suspended the methane regulation initially put in place in August 2016. The rule requires oil, gas, and well operators to monitor and limit emissions at drilling sites. Obama's EPA... Obama's EPA... estimated that the rule would cut more than 500,000 tons of methane pollution by 2025. This gives us hope for other actions and forced inactions handed down from these destroyers of all things good. This just in, the number of fatal shootings by police is nearly identical to last year. According to the Washington Post, police nationwide shot and killed, drumroll please, 492 people in the first 6 months of this year, a number nearly identical to the count for the same period in each of the two prior years. Fatal shootings by police in 2017 have so closely tracked last year's numbers that on June 16th, the tally was exactly the same. Although the number of unarmed people killed by police dropped slightly, the overall pace for 2017 through Friday was on track to approach 1,000 killed for a third year in a row. 1 of the Justice Department's top corporate crime watchdogs, Hui Chen, has resigned, declaring that she cannot enforce ethics laws against companies while she asserts her own bosses in the Trump administration have been engaging in conduct that she would never tolerate in corporations. What is going on in our country? Chen said, quote, "Trying to hold companies to standards that our current administration is not living up to was creating a cognitive dissonance that I could not overcome. To sit across the table from companies and question how committed they were to ethics and compliance felt not only hypocritical, but very much like shuffling the deck chair on the Titanic. Even as I engaged in those questioning and evaluations, on my mind were the numerous lawsuits pending against the President of the United States for everything from violations of the Constitution to conflict of interest, the ongoing investigations of potentially treasonous conducts, and the investigators and prosecutors fired for their pursuits of principles and facts. Those are conducts I would not tolerate for seeing in a company, yet I worked under an administration that engaged in exactly those conducts. I wanted no more part in it," unquote. Our president's voter fraud commission is underway. In an effort to take voter intimidation and suppression national, President Bratman has enlisted public enemy number one in voter suppression, Chris Kobach, now vice chair of the shiny new Presidential Advisory Committee on Election Integrity, cheating the GOP's way into defeating Democrats and democracy once and for all. K-O! Chris Kobach. Let's meet this gent, shall we? Chris Kobach, Kansas Secretary of State and conspiracy theorist who believes the myth that President Bratman won the popular vote once you subtract the 3 to 5 million illegal votes. Kobach, who co-authored SB 1070, Arizona's infamous racial profiling law from 2010, which required local law enforcement to demand the papers of anyone suspected of being in the country illegally. Papers, please! The law prompted nationwide outcry and economic boycott, and the ACLU fought it in the courts for years. The Supreme Court and the lower courts either blocked or drastically limited all of its major provisions. The anti-immigrant bill gave rise to several copycat bills in other states, including Alabama's HB 56, which Kobach also helped to draft. The ACLU and LA's defeated those laws in the courts as well, exposing the fact that Kobach's legislation was built on a foundation of legal error and assholitude. Kobach, who in 2010 assisted in drafting a bill designed to end the constitutional guarantee of birthright citizenship for any child born in the United States. That bill was too extreme to gain any traction, even among the legislatures that had adopted Kobach's reprehensible racial profiling laws. Kobach, who serves as counsel to the Immigration Law Reform Institute, a legal arm of the Federation for an American Immigration Reform, which the Southern Poverty Law Center has enlisted as a hate group since 2007. SPLC has written extensively about Kobach's role in advancing a nativist agenda. Kobach, who in 2012 compared homosexuality to drug abuse and polygamy. During his failed 2004 congressional campaign, he accused LGBTQ rights groups like Human Rights Campaign of promoting homosexual pedophilia. Oh, all of this, and we still haven't gotten to his voting rights shenanigans. Chris Kobach, who has wreaked havoc on voting rights in Kansas. According to the ACLU, in September 2016, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit, in a unanimous opinion by Judge Jerome Holmes, an appointee of George W. Bush, by the way, found that Kobach had engaged in mass denial of a fundamental right by blocking 18,000 motor voter applicants from registering to vote in Kansas. In just 2016, the ACLU's Voting Rights Project has sued him 4 times, and Kobach has lost in all those cases. Chris Kobach fantasizes about the hordes of non-citizens voting like Joss Whedon fantasizes about monsters. Kobach is the chief architect of the voter registration cross-check program, a notoriously flawed system which Kobach himself admits generates a significant number of false positives when trying to find people registered to vote in more than one state. And and when I say, significant number of false positives, check this out. A recent study found that CrossCheck would eliminate about 200 registrations used to cast legitimate votes for every one registration that was used to cast a double vote. And according to the Washington Post, Kobach examined 84 million votes cast in 22 states and looked for duplicate registrants, and in the end, 14 cases were referred for prosecution, representing 0.00000017% of the votes cast. Kobach has a secret voting plan. He showed it to Donald, but he doesn't want the public to see it. Last November, Kobach was notoriously photographed carrying documents into a meeting with the then-president-elect, which appeared to reference a proposal to change the federal motor voter law.
Thought we already went through this.
So, this voter suppression commission that Donald ordered and Kobach is heading up has ordered the states to deliver the detailed data on voters in all 50 states, including name, address, date of birth, party affiliation, and at least 4 security number digits and voting history back to 2006 of potentially every voter in the state. And the data will also be made available to the public, per the Washington Post. As of Friday, 14 states have refused the request in a whole or in part. Of all of the things this administration is doing, this commission worries me the most. I also find it the most creepy. As of yet, we have hope of undoing all the things the GOP has done so far. Should this commission prove successful and Democratic votes are suppressed and intimidated out of the voting booth, we could lose any hope of taking this country back. Remember, Republicans already have trifecta control in 25 states, control the governor's seat and both chambers of their legislative bodies, compared to 6 states for the Democrats. So even if these voter suppression efforts are only moderately successful, they could change our country in ways that will shape America into a future we haven't even begun to imagine. 6 states are all the Republicans need in order to call what is known as a constitutional convention. They've already had 28 states call for this constitutional convention. Think about it. 6 more. The original Constitutional Convention took place from May 25th to September 17th in 1787 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The intention from the outset of many of its proponents, chief among them was James Madison and Alexander Hamilton, was to create a new government rather than fix the existing one. The delegates elected George Washington to preside over the convention. The result of the convention was the creation of the United States Constitution. Buried within that constitution, however, was this short phrase, a short but dangerous phrase that enables an unprecedented mechanism to change the law of the land. If 2/3 of the states demand it, Congress shall call a convention for proposing constitutional amendments. They're gonna rewrite the Constitution, guys! And we, the people, would have no say in the matter. So, what can we do about this commission? Shed light on it. We cannot let this commission's proceedings go outrage-free. Let's make their actions politically untenable and resist them at every turn.
Resist!
Okay, moving on. Let's talk about some of the bills Congress has coming up that will piss us off. Senate Bill 20. This bill would deny publicly held companies a tax deduction for performance-based pay exceeding $1 million to any of its current or former executive directors if the corporation doesn't meet the pay fairness requirements this bill establishes. There would be 2 requirements. Firstly, that the average compensation paid to all U.S. employees for the tax-deductible year exceed the inflation and productivity growth What? Companies get tax breaks for CEO compensation? What the hell? I'm pretty sure going down the rabbit hole of the company tax breaks would break me. Anyhow, should companies lose tax breaks for CEO compensation if they don't give workers raises to cover inflation? My opinion, companies need to take care of their damn employees. And if they're not gonna give annual raises to workers but continue to pay executives astronomical amounts, then they should lose tax deductions. In fact, they should lose that tax deduction altogether. But that's just me. This bill won't pass, but I would vote for it. H.R. 2940. This bill would allow licensed members of Congress to carry... This bill would allow licensed members of Congress to carry a concealed weapon anywhere in America except in the U.S. Capitol or when in the presence of the president or vice president and prohibited from carrying by the Secret Service. We're talking amusement parks, churches, schools, haunted mansions, Halloween, you name it, they got it. Can you imagine these senators drunk at a bar or when, like, McCain messed up his medication or whatever it was he did recently? Who made them better than any other U.S. citizen? Sure, give the dotty old men the license to run around shooting themselves in the foot all day. If that didn't risk them shooting someone else by accident or on purpose, I might actually go for it. But fundamentally, this bucks state laws. It is BS. I vote no. All right, up next, there is a bill working its way through the House that shows one way or another the bloated red beast that is the GOP will undermine and destroy the ACA. House Bill 563. This bill, known as the Unaffordable Care Act, would exempt people from Obamacare's individual mandate if they live in a place with fewer than two insurance plans available in their exchange, or if they were on the cheapest available plan last year and this year's premium for it is more than 125% of the preceding year's. This legislation would take effect at the beginning of the month after its enactment, at which point relevant individuals would no longer be liable for the individual mandate's tax penalty. Look, I am sympathetic to the rising cost, and it isn't fair that people are being punished because their representatives are messing with healthcare and spooking the insurance companies into pulling out of their area and exchanges. But taking away the mandate is going to ultimately drive up cost even more for those who really need the healthcare, and it will only further spur the withdrawal of insurance companies. The lack of insurance company participation in the ACA can be directly related to the obstruction of the Republican Congress and Donald's administration's efforts to undercut the health program. The mandate is the underpinning of the program. If it goes, so does the ACA, and don't doubt for one second that the Republicans don't know this and consider this one of their main goals. I also understand that it would suck to be young and healthy and still be required to pay for health care, but the young may be healthy now, but there are no promises in life, and people should not be able to suddenly decide to participate when their health demands it and then drop after the crisis passes. It's insurance. It's purchased before the crisis and retained for life. Otherwise, when the healthy young person gets in an accident, the financial burden will fall on the hospital and the taxpayer as he receives services he can't pay for and then needs to go on public assistance. What we need is universal health care or Medicare for all. And all that serves as our reminder that the healthcare fight is still on. Have you called your senator today? I want to play you a clip. It's the proof that Republicans could give a crap about women.
Like we needed more.
Here is Democratic Congressman Mike Doyle, Democrat of Pennsylvania, speaking to Representative John Schmickisch of Oklahoma.
I'd just like to say to our friend from Oklahoma, none of us think this bill is perfect. I've never heard a single Democrat say that this bill was perfect. We knew that it needed work, and we wanted for the last 7 years to work with Republicans to try to improve this bill. You guys weren't very interested in that. I'm not sure what the gentleman is talking about when he talks about mandates. What mandate in the Obamacare bill does he take issue with? Certainly not with pre-existing conditions or caps on benefits or letting your child stay on the policy to 26. So I'm curious, what is it we're mandating?
Would the gentleman yield?
Yeah, sure.
What about men having to purchase prenatal care? Is that not correct?
Reclaiming my time.
And should they?
Reclaiming my time.
Whoa.
There's no such thing as a la carte. There's no such thing as a la carte insurance, John. You don't get the.
That's the point. That's the point. We want the consumer to be able to go to the insurance market and be able to negotiate on a plan.
Reclaiming my time. You tell me what insurance company will do that. There isn't a single insurance company in the world that does that, John. So you're talking about something that doesn't exist.
maternity care, both before and after birth, is one of the essential services the ACA requires plans to cover. That's Obamacare. Other required services include hospitalization, preventative care, and pediatric services. The Republican replacement bill will eliminate these requirements for Medicaid plans by 2020 and will instead leave the decision to what is considered essential up to the states. So do we trust that to Oklahoma? I don't. Look, I don't want to cover maternity care for others either. I'm never going to partake in such services, nor do I want to pay for prostate cancer. But you know what? I'm willing to make the system work. A major goal of Obamacare is protecting against unknown circumstances, something a narrow healthcare plan likely cannot do. Unless we think this pig-headed misogyny was limited to men, Schmickisch was not the first lawmaker to ask why men should have to pay for the cost of delivering a child. In 2013, then-Representative Renee Elmers, Republican of North Carolina, questioned then-Health Secretary Kathleen Sebelius on the matter during a House hearing. Quote, "To the best of your knowledge, has a man ever delivered a baby?" Unquote. Our Republican legislators are a bunch of bungholes. It's as simple as that. So keep fighting. Please call, write, town hall these mofos till they give up hope for their GOP quote-unquote care dreams. I was listening to NPR, and their political correspondent took this position. She said, the GOP would not have put off the AHCA vote unless they were dead set on getting it to pass. And the one thing that all GOP senators agree on is failure is not an option. Also, the one thing everyone seems to agree on is never bet against Mitch McConnell. The turtle is a closer. This is not the time to relax. Call your senator at their home offices, and on the next day, call their DNC office. We have a call to action! In an attempt to distract America from the healthcare debacle of their own creation and create some image that the Senate can get things done, in a surprise move, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McTurtle capped off Donald's Energy Week by announcing that the new energy bill would be brought to the floor when the Senate gets back from their July 4th vacation. This 891-page bill is being brought to the floor without going through committee, bypassing normal procedure.
Of course they are.
After killing off the misnamed Energy Modernization Act in the Congress, this new reincarnation of that bill, the Trump-McConnell Dirty Energy Bill, will be a disaster for our planet. This bill includes, once again, a section that would speed approval of exports of liquefied natural gas. This bill will give the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, even more authority over decisions about pipelines and natural gas. This bill will authorize millions of dollars for research into recovering methane hydrates, a dangerous new resource methane trapped under the ocean floor. We know this bill will lock us into fossil fuels for future decades to come. What's even more astounding is that the bill's renewables subtitle ignores solar and wind. They aren't even mentioned. We have to show the Senate. We oppose this Trump-McConnell dirty energy bill. Please help defeat this terrible bill. What you can do to resist. On my Facebook page at K-Voice of Resistance, I've posted a template you can read, sign, and personalize a message if you want. It makes it super easy. Send it to your senator. Also, call. Always. I shouldn't even have to say it anymore. Call your senator. You know the drill. It looks like McConnell wants to move on this the week after July 4th to distract from the healthcare debacle. So let's not let him do it. And we have to hold Democrats accountable, too, for opposing this nefarious plan. Cool? Cool. Speaking of the Democrats, the Democratic Party is a flawed institution with great power. And like it or hate it, it is our source of power. And I am going to lose my mind if I hear one more liberal tell me that both parties are just as corrupt. Really? Liberals, you gotta be kidding me with this. The fact that Democrats are indeed not a fraction as corrupt as the GOP is a good thing, and it is something we can feel good about. So let's feel good about it and toot the horn of the left for a minute, why don't we? This has been ghosting around the internet for a bit, and it serves as our answer to all those that dwell in false equivalencies, and it goes like this. I made a comment recently where I claimed that Republican administrations have been much more criminally corrupt over the last 50 plus years than the Democrats. I was challenged, dared actually, to prove it. So I did a bit of research, and when I say a bit, I mean it didn't take long at all, and there is no comparison. When comparing criminal indictments of those serving in the executive branch and presidential administrations, it is so lopsided as to be ridiculous. Yet, all I ever hear is how corrupt the Democrats are. So why don't we break it down by president, by the numbers? Obama, 8 years in office, zero criminal indictments, zero convictions, and zero prison sentences. So the next time somebody describes the Obama administration as scandal-free, they aren't speaking wishfully. They're simply telling the truth. George W. Bush, 8 years in office, 16 criminal indictments, 16 convictions, and 9 prison sentences. Clinton, 8 years in office, 2 criminal indictments, 1 conviction, and 1 prison sentence. That's right. Nearly 8 years of investigations, tens of millions spent, and 30 years of claiming them to be the most corrupt ever. There was exactly one person convicted of a crime. George Bush, Sr. 4 years in office, 1 indictment, 1 conviction, 1 prison sentence. Reagan, 8 years in office, 26 criminal indictments, 16 convictions, and 8 prison sentences. Carter, 4 years in office, 1 indictment, 0 convictions, 0 prison sentences. Ford, 2.5 years in office, 1 indictment, 1 conviction, 1 prison sentence. Nixon, 6 years in office, 76 criminal indictments, 55 convictions, and 15 prison sentences. Johnson, 5 years in office, 0 indictments, 0 convictions, 0 prison sentences. So let's see where that leads us. In the last 53 years, Democrats have been in office for 25 of those years, while Republicans have held it for 28. In their 25 years in office, the Democrats have had a total of 3 executive branch officials indicted with 1 conviction and 1 prison sentence. That is 1 singular executive branch official convicted of a crime in 2.5 decades of Democratic leadership. In the 28 years that Republicans have held office in the last 53 years, they have had a total of 120 criminal indictments of executive branch officials, 89 criminal convictions, and 34 prison sentences handed down. That is 1 more prison sentence and years in office since 1968 for Republicans. And now if you want to count articles of impeachment as indictments, they aren't really, but we can count them as an action. Both sides get one more. However, Clinton wasn't found guilty while Nixon resigned and was pardoned by Ford. So those only serve to make Republicans look even worse. With everything going on with Trump and his people right now, it is safe to bet that Republicans are going to be padding their numbers a bit real soon. So let's just go over the numbers one more time, shall we? 120 indictments for Republicans, 89 convictions, 34 prison sentences. Those aren't feelings or alternate facts. Those are simply stats by the numbers. Republicans are, and have been for my entire lifetime, the most criminally corrupt party to hold the office of the presidency. End of argument. Unquote. Case closed. So spare me the next time you want to throw around false equivalencies again, because I am not having any of it. Stop with the purity test and righteous indignation when I'm a politician, not some perfect flower. They are goddamn politicians. None of them get away scot-free. This idealistic quest for a hero is beneath us. We take the best of what we got and we work for better. It doesn't mean we stop pressuring the party or our politicians to do better. Of course not. But let's not destroy ourselves in the process. Finally, as we celebrate this Independence Day, I want to read you from Thomas Jefferson's final letter to Roger Whiteman. Quote, "The remnant of that host of worthiness who joined with us on that day in the bold and doubtful election we were to make for our country between submission or the sword, and to have enjoyed with them the conciliatory fact that our fellow citizens, after half a century of experience and prosperity, continue to approve the choice we have made. May it be to the world that I believe it will be, to some parts sooner, to other parts later, but finally to all, the signal of arousing men to burst the chains under which monkish ignorance and superstition had persuaded them to bind themselves and to assume the blessings and security of self-government, that from which we have substituted restores the free right to the unbound exercise of reason and freedom of opinion. All eyes are opened or opening to the rights of man. The general spread of light of science has already laid open to every view." Unquote. Thank you for listening to my show, K-Voice of Resistance, on the Crab Diving Network and crabdiving.com under the K-Voice tab. Or you can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever it is you pod. Follow me on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance and on Twitter at Kelly the Voice. But whatever you do, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.